Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, you lovely lot, and welcome to this week's edition of Tuesday Night Jaw. Yes. It has been a minute. It has been a week since our previous episode. An episode that has been very interesting in terms of feedback. I mentioned when recording it how I also felt a little bit awkward about doing it because I never wanted to come off as sort of sanctimonious or that I'm preaching to people. And I always wanted it to be intended of just to give a bit of advice and a bit of just some of the experiences that I've been through in wrestling. And it's been really, really cool to have such feedback from, especially people that are in wrestling, whether they have been around a while or they're brand new or they're looking to get in. I really appreciated everyone sort of taking that time to either talk to me about it or drop me a DM. So yeah, thank you very much. It really does help when creating stuff like this. That I know, again, it's gonna sound really like hammy and like cliche, but I don't really think of episodes in terms of, oh, is this episode gonna do well on ad revenue or is it gonna get the most listens? I very much have the opinion of I just want to create something that I'm proud of and that I want people to listen to or just to engage with. I think maybe even more importantly is that engagement and that worth of the episodes that I'm putting out. I'd rather something get a lot less listens but have a bigger impact or, you know, that bigger level of interaction. So I really do appreciate everyone that's sort of taken a moment. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, go back and give it a listen. It's just, it's like 6 or 7 points about how to conduct yourself and little tips and tricks of getting into professional wrestling, or if you've been in wrestling for a while, just how I view a few different bits and pieces and situations. So yeah, you go back through the archive and listen to that. I am really happy with a lot of the stuff that I've done already this year. The Jimmy episode is obviously phenomenal. It's still giving me my favorite quote we've probably ever done on a podcast. So I feel like there's a nice little bit of variety. And if you just like football and you pretend that you like wrestling, like me and Jim did for one episode, go and listen to the episode with Jim where we pick our own wrestling football faction. The episode's called The Santiago Strikers, and you'll see why that reference is made if you go back and listen to that episode. Carrying on the plugs and shills, I've never done this before, and I don't know why I'm doing it now, but I just wanted to do it today, so there you go. We've just come off doing Progress. It is currently Tuesday when I'm recording this, which is the day it should come out, so I'm a little bit tired, a little bit worn down, because we did the show on Sunday, and it was a real chaotic one. We obviously had a couple of injuries. I'm going to try and avoid spoilers, but I'm talking about it. We had a couple of injuries, so people weren't able to wrestle, and it was just a bit of a chaotic show in general behind the scenes. I even ended up having to do commentary on the main event, which I didn't expect / plan to do. So if my voice is a bit croaky and I sound a bit tired and a bit like run down, it's because it was a busy day at work. I also stupidly decided to stay after the show for a bit and make sure everything was sorted and have a like debrief and everything. So I ended up getting back through my own front door at 10 to 11 after leaving my front door at 7 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, it was a long one. So if anyone spoke to me at the show, especially after the show, and I was a bit spaced out or a bit all over the place, I apologize. I was running on fumes. Yes. The other controversy was the trousers that I was wearing. I thought of all the places in the world, Camden would be the most accepting in terms of fashion changes. I wore trousers that Suplex Joel kept on referring to as Rupert the Bear trousers. So that was controversial. It split the room, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I'm trying new things. I'm trying to put my own little spin on stuff, and I don't always want to wear trainers and a t-shirt. So yeah, there you go. It's not going to turn into, like, you know, an episode of Gokwan's fashion info episodes before the beginning of the shows and stuff like that, but you know, we'll see. You never know what I'll wear. Maybe spruce it up next month, who knows. We'll see. Talking to next month as well, and we announced a couple of matches off the back of the show on Sunday. So we have, and again, this is spoiler free, we have the Young Guns, who are making their Camden debut, going up against the Anti-Fun Police in a tag match, which I think, and probably someone's going to correct me, I think it's the first time that match has ever happened. So that's exciting. It's exciting that my children get to come and see their dad work in the ballroom. That's referring to the Young Guns, who apparently I am their dad. So yeah, I'm excited for them. They're really pumped up for it. I'm really excited for Anti-Fun Police as well, who have really been hitting a groove this year, especially, again, if you've not seen stuff on demand, gone back and watched their tag team match against Devlin and Davis in Cardiff. It was a banger. So we've announced that. Now we've also announced a singles match between Travis Banks and Kyle Fletcher. Obviously, Kyle Fletcher's had a hell of a year, found himself in a main event, and potentially nearly became Progress World Champion. And of course, he had a title shot against Paul Robinson on Sunday as well. Travis Banks was set to appear on Sunday, but again, due to an injury, he wasn't cleared. So this is actually going to be the first time he's been in the ballroom since beating TK Cooper, which took me off guard because I didn't realize it had been that long. So Trav, obviously, history with the company, former Super Strong Style winner, former Progress World Champion. So a very good singles match lined up as well between two people that know each other very, very well from training and spending years traveling and wrestling each other. So those are the first two matches announced for our next show in Camden. Tickets and all that business is on This Is_Progress on Twitter. go and get involved in that. And there you go. Right, that's the rambly, pluggy bits and pieces out of the way. Also, I've started sticking both ad breaks at the beginning of the podcast out, because mainly because I keep forgetting to be like, here's an ad. yeah, hopefully that works a little bit better. And also, I really appreciate, you know, just spending that 30 seconds to a minute just listening to them, because it does help the podcast. And hopefully it doesn't disrupt the flow of episodes now as well. So again, it's just something I'm trying. If you've got any feedback on that, just let me know. You know, either tweet me or DM me on Twitter. My handle is @mrichardshost. I'm pretty reachable on there. And as talking of which, this is how we put together's episode. Today's episode. You can see how tired I am, because it is another Q&A episode. I've said that I'm planning on trying to do one maybe once a month. We'll see how it goes. Maybe spread it out a little bit more, maybe a month and a half, maybe 2 months, but we'll see. But it is a Q&A episode, so I asked you guys to send me some questions on the old Twitter. I even said, and this is for future reference as well, if you don't ever feel comfortable me reading or you tweeting something publicly, you can DM me as well. I'll keep it anonymous. Every question this week is going to be anonymous, because I've essentially just copied and pasted all the questions into a notepad and forgot to put everyone's name on it, but I can remember some people's names in terms of the questions. So there you go. So if you ever want to just like DM me and ask me a question, and I can answer it on this, you can do that as well. Right, let's get started. So first question, shockingly, is a reference to football. And the question is Germany 0, Italy 2 from the semi-finals of the 2006 World Cup the greatest football match ever? It's not. It is significant. It's a very significant match. It's difficult with football now, because football always has nostalgia. So, for instance, like I always remember the 4-3 Liverpool Newcastle match. I always remember Benny McCarthy scoring against Arsenal at Ewood Park in a FA Cup quarter final, I think. And running over to the bench and being at Ewood Park and being right next to the bench and being caught up in the celebrations. I think I was hugging Chris Samba, maybe. I can't remember. But like, football has this thing of like, as time goes on, you kind of like, it adds mystique and like relevance, because usually matches are like a significant moment, either a turning point or a significant moment going forward. So I know that Germany match for Germany was very, very important. I recommend, if you are interested in football, as some of you are and some of you aren't, I recommend a book called Das Reboot, which is written by a author called Raphael Hostenstein. I always get his name like really bad, I apologize. He writes for The Athletic now. He does the Bundesliga coverage for The Athletic. He also does a German podcast, but he's written a couple of books. One about the Germans' love of the English game was, I think, his first book, which is a really interesting perspective of English football from a German fan or German fans' perspective. But Das Reboot is his last book, which is about the change in mentality and the change that of the youth structure and the way that clubs do business in the Bundesliga that had a huge impact on how German football was run and conducted, which obviously led to them becoming world champion. So if you are interested in that, it's called Das Reboot, and I recommend it greatly. So it's probably not the greatest match ever, but it is a significant one. You gotta love an underrated Italian football team for several reasons, because every time they're underrated, they have a really good kit. And there's some banging haircuts going on as well. So there you go. All right. Next question. What is your true opinion of the pedestrianisation of Norwich City Centre? Now, there's a couple of things here. First of all, there is some Partridge questions, because I used a Partridge GIF on the question, Fred, purely because it made me laugh. So there's going to be some Partridge questions. And to answer this question, I've only been to Norwich a handful of times. I can remember one time I went to watch an NXT show, maybe, when they did it there, I think. And the whole crowd were chanting Dan for Dan Maloney, which led to the story of Jim's told publicly, I think, of Jim had to then explain to a lot of American wrestlers / American coaches and agents that were working the show what the reference was, which is funny. So I can't give my true opinion on the pedestrianization because I don't think I had a really good feel for it. But I will say this: Norwich has some good pubs. Like, I can't remember where we were, but we were in a pub and it was really nice. It was like a really like old timey, old school pub, and it caught me off guard because I didn't know what to expect in Norwich, and I was very impressed. So there you go, TripAdvisor. There's my opinion on Norwich. Okay, next question is from my former tag team partner. The man that I was best man at his wedding for, and the person that probably wishes that we still weren't friends because he has to deal with me on a daily basis. It is Sam Bailey, and he asks my top 10 lists because he's a cruel, cruel man. If you ever want to see me and Sam and a great representation of our friendship, come to Insomnia Gaming Festival, which we co-host together on the main stage. And it's really amusing to us because we get progressively more less tolerant of each other's BS throughout the weekend, so end up just slagging each other off on stage, much like a lot of my friendships are. You know, that's just the way we do it. So there you go. There's a plug for Insomnia as well. Top 10 lists. I do like a top 10 greatest albums of all time. I do like a top 10 footballers of all time. Wrestlers of all time, wrestling factions of all time, video games of all time, best cruiserweights in WCW between 1999 and 2001. That's a good top 10 list. Top 10 Partridge quotes, top 10 tartan trousers, which is a great sentence to say. Got two more. Top 10 vines. Can't go wrong with top 10 vines because, you know, there is now a generation of us that just watch vines on YouTube and long for Vine 2.0. Make it happen, someone. If Ashton Kutcher can buy MySpace and then try and relaunch MySpace, then I don't know. The guy from Dawson's Creek can buy Vine and try and relaunch it. I've got one top 10 list left. Top 10 places to get a coffee in Manchester. There you go. That is my top 10 lists. Oh, my brain hurts after that. All right, next question. I actually quite like this one. Who wins in a steel cage match between Optimus Prime and Megatron if Dusty Rhodes was booking? The reason I like this question is because you kind of go, all right, steel cage match, Optimus Prime, Megatron, and then it's just the Dusty Rhodes bit at the end, which just really made me chuckle when I read it. All right, so apparently there's a new Transformers thing coming out on Netflix. I watched the trailer for it, and I got excited because Transformers is interesting because obviously I was super into Transformers as a kid. And then like one Christmas, probably like 10 years ago, one of my relatives bought me, I think, the first 3 or 4 seasons of Transformers, and it's not as good as I remember it was. So I went back and watched it, and I was like, oh, it's essentially just the same episode, just reskinned with new people. So there is that. And then obviously there's the Transformers movies, the cartoon one, classic. If you want to cry about a robot dying, classic. And then there's the live action ones, which, like, I think the first three were all right, and then it just got stupid afterwards. But much like the Fast and Furious, I still watch it, which is, I think I'm the problem here, society. I just watch this stuff. All right, but if we're going to book him in wrestling, okay. Well, it depends. You got to do. It depends what business are we doing. Are we talking like you know, are we talking like war games and they've been fighting for the whole of the summer in up and down sort of like Georgia, the Georgia territory? Because if that's the case, and if this is a final match that's going on, say, for instance, the Clash of the Champions, then it has to be Optimus Prime that goes over. So ultimately, the babyfaces need to prevail. But it'd probably be a case of, it would be a dusty finish, where there'd be a run in from Starscream. If we're going to do a dusty finish, a run in from Starscream would definitely work. But I don't know. Dusty like to do a bit of business. But then if we're talking TNA, if it's Lethal Lockdown, woof, it's a different ball game altogether, you know. I don't know what Optimus Prime's finisher would be. I'm trying to think of it. Because he's got a gun. No, Megatron's got a gun, right? Optimus Prime has got like a sword type thing. I don't know. Maybe the finish is, you know, when like Eddie Guerrero used to throw the chair at someone and like they catch it and then he pretends to be hit. All right, this is how it's going to end. Ref bump, ref's down, bit of back and forth, leads to Megatron lying down in robot form and somehow making Optimus Prime transform into his truck form and lying down and make it look like Optimus Prime attempted murder and ran him over, leading to a DQ from the referee. There you go, because hit and runs are illegal in professional wrestling, I'm going to assume. That's how Dusty would book it. Wow, that's my legacy there in answer of a question. All right, next question. If Alan Partridge was a manager in British wrestling, who would be his client? Oh, someone really, really cleverly replied to this tweet with, it's obviously Dan Maloney, and I really enjoyed that. It was good pun. But I'm trying to think of people that he would work well with. If he was a sort of a Gary Hart-esque manager in terms of, like, Gary Hart was still an active wrestler and would be dragged into matches, Alan Partridge and Chris Egan would be an absolute dream team of people. That is just money. Partridge and Egan, I mean, I want to watch that sitcom, let alone watch them team up together in wrestling. So I think Partridge and Egan would be my first shout. But if we're just talking pure manager, this is going to shock people. Alan Partridge would manage Ligero because in British wrestling, there is a lot of Alan Partridge fans in the locker rooms. But I don't think there is anyone that is bigger. There is a bigger Partridge fan than El Ligero or Ligero now. Obviously, he's only ever watched the Spanish edition, or the edition that's in Spanish. But he does a very good Partridge impression. So I'm going to put Alan Partridge as the manager of Ligero. Make it happen, Sid Scala / Johnny Saint in NXT UK. There you go. All right, this is a good question. I like this. Do you have a particular style of wrestling you prefer? Who was the first wrestler that grabbed your attention when you first started watching wrestling? So it's pretty much two questions. So I'll answer the second bit first. So who was the first wrestler that grabbed your attention when you started watching wrestling? I'm trying to think of like the person I mentioned before, like, so it was me and CJ Banks that used to be friends from childhood, and he was him that got me into wrestling. So we used to love like the Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian. So it's probably one of those four, probably Jeff Hardy in that case. And then, because obviously like The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin and stuff, but I think because I've always liked cruiserweights and smaller dudes that like, or smaller wrestlers that like, I always gravitated to the flippy ones. So, yeah, it's probably the Hardy Boys or Edge and Christian in terms of the first ones grabbing my attention. But do you have a particular style of wrestling you prefer? So the actual answer to this question is no, and that's why I like wrestling, because wrestling's a variety show, and a really good wrestling show has a little bit of everything, you know, whether it's comedy, hardcore, shoot style, high flying, heavyweight, whatever, you know. it always makes for a better show in terms of a show collectively. But I know that that is a really sitting on the fence answer. So I did think about it, and I think if it was like a desert island thing or gun to my head moment, I'd probably say hybrid slash shoot fighting, which might be surprising to some people because basically of my love of Toramon slash Dragon Gate and anything that's flippy and fast. But the reason why I think I would lean towards like the hybrid shoot style is because it's beauty in combat, leave it. Its beauty is within its rule set. So the limitations put onto the matches, so you know, let's use Tetsujin for example, because there's a million different like hybrid wrestling shoot style rules, you know, from rings to UWFI to Pancrase, like there's loads of different wrestling rules within it. So the Tetsujin rules have always been you can win by knockout submission, you have the maximum of 3 rope breaks, and there is no time limits on a fight. So that makes it seem like, you know, that oh, that's quite a tunneled visioned perspective in terms of how to win that fight, but it's the space and gaps between the rules that make it interesting, because obviously having that free rope break thing is like, okay, so if you know that you've got 3 attempts to try and put a submission in, like how do you make your opponent try and expend his submission, his rope break total, or do you go for the submission, or do you go, well, I'm not going to go for submissions because, you know, there's a chance that he might keep escaping it, and that's a risk I don't want to take, so am I going to knock that person out? This is a thing that a lot of people, well, very few people cottoned onto in Tetsujin. It's technically no DQs in a shoot fight. It's frowned upon, much like in the early UFCs, where eye gouging and headbutts are legal, but you don't really want to do it because it's bad sportsmanship. So someone could come in and absolutely destroy someone with a chair and potentially win by knockout. And then obviously there's the no time limit thing that we had at Tetsujin. Basically makes it a marathon, not a sprint, though a lot of fights are a sprint because of the physical style of it. So I like that style of wrestling, especially the older I've got, because of the multiple opportunities and multiple things that you can do with that style of wrestling. So again, I genuinely do love every bit of wrestling. Me and Jim and Craig and Taff actually were watching the best of CZW the other day, and me and Jim were loving it. I don't think the other two were too much, but that, you know, I love every bit of wrestling. You know, as long as it's good, then I enjoy it. So I genuinely do just think that's what makes wrestling good, is a variety act. All right, next question: how many fish would Bobby Fish fry if Bobby Fish could fry fish? It's a question that Matt Riddle is trying to get to the bottom of. Now, I think that Bobby Fish is a capable man, and I think he can fry a fish. But the question is how big is his skillet, or his pan, or his frying equipment? Because like, I think, and again, and it depends what fish it is. You know, we're talking mackerel here. We're talking tuna. Are we talking, you know, swordfish? Has he got a grill? Has he got a normal stove on top of an oven that we have here in Britain? There's so many multiple aspects to this question that even if he can fry, how many can he fry based on the equipment that he has? So I think it's a mystery that we're never going to get to the end to. But if there's ever one man that can solve this riddle, it's Matt Riddle. You're welcome. Where does one get to those mighty fine trousers you wore at Progress the other day? Yes, yes, yes. I did tell you the trousers split opinion. Those trousers that I was wearing, I purchased through ASOS, but they are Boohoo, I think. There's a nice collection of checked / tartan trousers on ASOS at the minute. So if you are in the market for some trousers of the checked variety, get on to ASOS. I'd love it if ASOS listened to this and were like, yeah, you've got a sponsorship now, because then that would save me a lot of money. But there you go, yeah, ASOS or Boohoo. for the trousers worn at Progress. Favorite Partridge quote. Mine is, "I can read you like a book, Lynn, and not a very good one. Certainly not Bravo 2-0 by Andy McNab, which actually improves with every read." Yeah, that is a good Partridge quote. This is like picking your favorite children. It changes a lot. It changes. I really like the episode with Michael's new friend, Tex, who likes all the American things. Which I've got a question later on, which will be in sort of connection to this, but it's one of my favourite Partridge moments when he's singing, "Nobody does it better." Big woman swinging on a big luger. That's one of my favourite bits in Partridge. But there's a line in that episode where he's on the floor, and I think Tex and Michael walk in, or Tex walks in, and Partridge looks at him and goes, "Oh, I'm having a hoedown. I'm down, but I'm not a hoe," is one of my favourite lines in Partridge. Let me know what your favourite lines of Partridge is. And if you've never seen I'm Alan Partridge, by the way, there's two seasons, go and watch it. It's just the best. The absolute best. All right. Oh, cool. Right. Slightly more sensible question now. This is good, by the way, because this is what I wanted. I wanted a mix of, like, sensible, businessy, silly. Like, I like it. Again, much like a wrestling show, variety is a good thing. I was wondering if there was any way of getting into the business on a clerical side. I have a background in venue management. I was wondering if there were roles in the business for people like that. So there is. So, for instance, we have a tour manager, and he's also responsible for like when we do big shows like Alexandra Palace or like Wembley. He'll organise all our press for us. He does so much for us in terms of, especially when we're on the road and stuff. So they'll be coming with us to Florida to help that tour run smoothly. So there is absolutely that, and we have in the past used either an individual. I can't comment too much on it because I was only working for the company in terms of, like, you know, just being a commentator at the time. But then we have used like either a company or a person to be like a liaison in terms of between venues and us as a company. So there is a market there for it, but the problem is that obviously it depends on the size of the company and it depends on the venues you're running. So there is a market, but it's just finding the right place in terms of getting in. But if you do have experience in terms of, like, you know, venue management or anything like that, then that is absolutely invaluable. I'm just trying to think. I can't confidently recommend companies, you know, that might be looking for that or might be thinking about, you know, taking that step. But there is definitely people in there. It's a massive crossover between, like, music and wrestling. You know, our lighting team at the ballroom, our sound and lighting team, can't do Alexandra Palace, the Super Strong Style for us, because they're on tour with a K-pop band, which we were laughing about on Sunday. And we were sort of talking about all the different gigs that you get from the crossover. So my mate from Insomnia, who does our lighting, does our sound engineering at Insomnia, now actually does the NXT shows, so the NXT UK shows. And it's really funny because he got, I think the first time he'd ever seen wrestling live was when Fight Club Pro did Insomnia that year, and he loved it. And then he actually got a gig because he works for like a third party company, you know, we outsource him for Insomnia, and he actually got a gig through for doing WWE live events. So he does the WWE live events, and he's done like the European tours and stuff. So he went to Austria and you know, France, Germany, and all that. And then he ended up doing NXT UK. So yeah, big shout out to Jake, as he's now been dubbed by a few people, Jake the Snake. So yeah, so there is definitely a market there, and there is definitely jobs and stuff for people that are on the more events management side of stuff, or you know, the tour side of it. So and I know there is there is opportunities above independent wrestling as well, especially when it comes to things like NXT and promotions that are regularly touring. I used to know the tour managers for, I was going to say TNA, Impact now, isn't it? I used to know them in the UK, and they've done various roles within wrestling as well as just events in general. So yeah, that is actually, you know, this is actually a really interesting point. If you're thinking about studying events management or anything like that, it's a really, really invaluable thing. We always really need reliable people, especially if the industry continues to grow, especially on an independent level. It's invaluable to have someone's experience in a field like that. So yeah, hopefully that's kind of a bit of a... Yeah, hopefully that's just a little bit of information for you. All right, next question. Will Progress ever do a show in good old Somerset? Bridgewater would be good. That was a private DM. Yeah, so I've ended up talking to a few people from the Southwest these days at shows, whether it was at Cardiff or when I was doing Chaos at Bristol. And there's a big demand for not just Progress, for wrestling in the Southwest. And I do think it's an underutilized, untapped market, because I know there's a couple of promotions that run sort of like Devon and Cornwall, but I don't think anyone's had a sort of extended period in running shows there with you know, or regularity. So I'll never say never, but it's all dependent on a few things. Obviously, you know, we have certain venues that we run, so it's just whether those venues are available, or you know, there's a scope to go there and for it to be a profitable show. Obviously, you know, that's all the business side of it. That's nothing to do with me. I don't make decisions like that because I am an idiot. So I'd never say never, but I do really, and I've had this discussion with the people I've been talking about Southwest, is that I really hope that someone builds a Southwest promotion. And I mean, like, you've obviously got Chaos in Bristol, which is unbelievably good, and it's gone into new management now with Flash and Hitch. So the Bristol will always be sort of the crown jewel on that. But I know from someone who used to live in St. Austell that there's very Cornish people and people from Devon and Somerset are very mistrusting of people from Bristol. So, you know, Bristol may as well be London to them. They're all fancy and stuff like that. So I understand that people within, you know, Devon, Somerset and Cornwall want their own thing. So it'd be really cool if someone actually did start a promotion down there and starting to shine some light on some Southwest talent, because there is talent down there. You know, Chaos has been finding out in the last year or so, you know, there's a lot of people down there that can really go, and there's some that could potentially be big stars. So I think there is definitely an opportunity for someone to do something really cool down there. All right, if you could bring back anything from 99 to 2000 WCW, what would it be and why? Probably the cruiserweights, in terms of like it being a standalone division. So I know 205, was a thing and still is a thing, but I just felt, you know, at the beginning of it there was hope, because it did feel like his own thing, and obviously it's a successful. It's a successful brand, given the success of people like, you know, Ali and Buddy Murphy and Cedric Alexander, and you know, the list goes on and on and on. And there's still massive amounts of talent within that roster, but I feel like now it's kind of an add-on rather than it being an attraction. So I would really like to see a proper cruiserweight division with tag belts, and the cruiserweight title being defended regularly, not just on NXT and 205, but on Raw and or SmackDown. You know, like, don't get me wrong, at the minute the cruiserweight stuff on NXT has been absolutely fantastic, because the champion at the minute I quite like in the form of Jordan Devlin, so that's really helped I think the NXT shift in terms of it being the NXT Cruiserweight Championship has been a big shift in changing the perception of it. So I'd really like to see them build on that. Maybe have some tag teams in there as well, and you know, really give it its own identity, because I think that's the only thing that WCW did pretty well in 99-2000 was the presentation of the Cruiserweights. Again, admittedly, after anyone tried to break out of the Cruiserweight division, it didn't go very well. So yeah, there is that. It's either that or Kiss Demon, as I always say. Get Kiss Demon back in. What a gimmick that was. Okay, football question. Paul Warhurst or Kennedy Baki... I can never pronounce this and I'm going to get absolutely slaughtered. Is it Bakrigul? Kennedy. Which was the better multi-purpose player? Probably Paul Warhurst. The name alone sounds like Warhorse. So I'm thinking, you know, workhorse. Paul Warhurst, probably. Don't quote me on it, though. I think my favourite multi-purpose player of all time... I tell you the one that always used to make me laugh, where, like, there's two of them. It's Chris Sutton and Dion Dublin, because obviously both strikers, absolutely definitely strikers, especially Sutton, part of that SAS team, Sutton and Shearer. But I'd love it in the 90s when it felt dead exotic for some reason that Dion Dublin would play centre-half or Chris Sutton would play centre-half. It's mad now, isn't it? You know, you got flipping, you know, Joshua Kimmich, who plays for Bayern Munich, who can literally play in any position on the pitch. But, you know, back in the 90s, like, oh, Dion Dublin's at centre-back. I got some hype back there. He's going to be winning. He's going to be winning those second balls. So, yeah, there you go. All right, a couple of questions left. I don't know why I'm laughing about Dion Dublin being a centre-back, but there we go. Right, next question. Shoestring, Taggart, Spender, Bergerac, Morse. What does that say to you about regional detective series? That they've got the same naming system as WWE for female talent? I don't know, actually. The Northern? I don't know, the North? There's more violence and killing in the North? You know, Taggart, there's been a murder. I'm not going to do the accent because that's really offensive to anyone that has ever tried to do accents. I guess that there's more... The proper takeaway from regional detective series is never trust a small town or village anywhere in the UK. Doesn't have to be even, you know, in the north. Just don't. If anyone's been watching The Stranger on Netflix, which you should check out now, it also goes along with that. It's a great series, but never trust a small town in the UK. There you go. That's some advice for people visiting. Apparently there's a lot of murder and deception going on. Right, two more questions. Here we go. I told you there'd be another Partridge one, and it is the last one. What's your favorite Partridge bit? So it's that weird thing, right? I was thinking about this the other day. I was actually thinking about it on the train on Sunday, and I've not said this out loud yet, but I was thinking that I think now I prefer Those Jeans by Genuine more than I do Pony. But the problem is that I don't know if I actually prefer the song more, or it's just because I've heard Pony so many times that it's a nice break to hear another Genuine song. So I feel like that's the same with Partridge, because there's so many, like, iconic moments that have been shared and quoted that I now lean towards the slightly more obscure Partridge bits. But I'm going to go with one that's from the first series of I'm Alan Partridge, because that series is way darker than the second season. I think the second season was better in terms of, like, a show and its writing and the comedy, but I really enjoyed how dark the first season of I'm Alan Partridge is. So it's either a cross between... There's a bit where Michael and Alan see each other, and Michael's outside and Partridge is at his window, and they're doing, like, they're not saying anything to each other, but they're doing, like, silly, like, gestures to each other. And there's a bit where, like, Alan Partridge pretends to put a gun in his mouth, and, like, and shoot it. And it's just really dark and like twisted humor that even the laughter track is almost like a regrettable laugh. And for some reason, it's always made me go, oh man, that's really dark, but quite funny. So there's that bit, but there's also the bit where he dresses up as a shitty zombie. I love that bit. I love that bit. And just him explaining all the bits and pieces that he's used from his hotel room and the bit with the shower curtain. So yeah, I think it's a toss up between them, because I quite like my dark humor in the sense that, I think that's what makes Partridge great, is that he is, as a character, there's just this really dark, depressive undertone of him, but the stupidity and the calamity that is his life is just funny. So yeah, it's probably something from the first series, but there you go. That was a long-winded answer for a very simple question, but there you go. All right, final question. Save this one to last, because I was trying to think about it, because I'll just answer it. All right, so the question is, any dream venues you'd like to ring announce in? So the reason why I find it hard to think about it, because I'm a bit weird in the sense that I don't have like sentimental attachment or attachment to things like that in wrestling. I think it comes down again, and I always say this, and I'm trying to harp on about it, because I got into wrestling so late, and I was like 14, and I got into wrestling, that I didn't have like this attachment already, like as a kid, Madison Square Garden, it's the thing that you saw on TV when you were a kid watching wrestling, and again, like you were told from a young age, like, oh, it's the greatest wrestling venue in the world, it's the greatest venue in the world. I never really had that attachment until later on in life, and I guess Currican Hall in Japan would be one, because it's so iconic and because I spent a lot of time in my 20s watching various promotions in Japan. Budokan Hall, maybe, because of all Japan / Noah. I know for a fact Jim was like, he still can't get over that he did the ECW arena, and when we did the podcast with Jimmy as well, that he still was just could not get his head around doing the ECW arena in Philadelphia. So maybe that, I don't know, but then I don't really have that attachment. I think for me, probably, if it was like an ECW arenas, it'd probably be Hammerstein more than Philly. But yeah, I don't really have a sentimental attachment to venues. Like, there's venues I really like. Like, I love the O2 Ritz, because it's one of the first big venues I ever did. And when we're in Manchester later on in the year, it'll be the first time I ever get to ring announce for Progress in there. So I've obviously commentated there as well, and I'm ring announce for another company there as well. But so that'll be good. Like, anytime I'm in Manchester, that means a lot. But I don't think there's. I've never done the academy in Manchester, because Fight Club Perot have run the academy a few times, but it always clashed with other stuff, and I could never do it because it was Dream Tag Weekend, which is traditionally when I'm doing Insomnia. So I only ever used to do the first leg or two legs of Dream Tag. So I've never done the academy in Manchester. So I suppose that would be quite cool, because I've seen a million bands in there. But I'd love to do something mental, though. I'd love to do, like, I don't know, just somewhere random, we were talking about it before, about the Southwest. There's a wrestling company that run in Bodmin Jail, and I always love it, because everyone that's on that show always posts the pictures of him in Bodmin Jail, so that would be pretty gnarly. Like, maybe ring announcing in a castle would be quite cool, just to say I ring announce in a castle, maybe. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm never going to turn my nose up of like, oh, here's Madison Square Garden. I'm never going to be like, yeah, whatever. I like intimate venues. I really like intimate venues. So things like, I'm looking forward to, again, looking forward to Alexandra Palace, because it's the novelty of it. And obviously Wembley would be cool, but I think I'm better as a ring announcer. One, it's an intimate crowd and everyone's on top of me, because that's sort of how I learned to do my job. Like, my favorite thing about the ballroom is doing the walk through the crowd on the entrance, or the, you know, when I come in from the side, because it's that connection that you have. And like, you can, as a ring announcer, as a host, you actually get a sense of the energy and the feeling in the room better than if you are doing a larger venue. So I actually prefer that, because for me, I always try and ride the momentum of the crowd, or know where I need to bring more energy, or I need to do less talking. The way I do my job is actually, I actually think about a lot. So I know it seems like pure chaos and it seems like I'm just shouting and doing mad shit, but there is an element of that, but I am consciously doing things because I think, okay, this is the moment I need to do this and stuff. So I actually prefer like really, really, really intimate venues. That's why I loved Fight Club Pro's Old Venue Fiction, which was, essentially the fans were on top of the ring. You had to walk through them to make your entrance. And that I had to stand in the crowd while ring announcing to watch the show. And like, it made me love that venue so much more. And made me really connect with that audience, because I was in the audience with them, and we got to talk about stuff and, you know, chat and watch the show together and go through the sort of same range of emotions. So I love like little intimate smaller venues. So yeah, there you go. If you ever want to coax me into doing a show somewhere near you, just find the smallest and most intimate venue and I'll probably love it, because that's the wrestling that I like. Right. Okay. That's all the questions. Thank you very much for taking your time out and to ask me a few things. I'm still trying to get the timing on the question, Fred. I'm really bad at like tweeting out at the right times. You probably noticed, and you're probably like, why are you tweeting out at 9 o'clock in the morning? So like, because first thing I do when I get up, I should probably use TweetDeck a bit more. So I'm still trying to get the timing and stuff like that of the optimal time to get as many questions out of you guys as possible. But I do really appreciate you guys taking a moment out of your day to either send me a message or to tweet me a question. Right, TNJ will continue to plow on. I have got, as I mentioned on last week's episode, I've got a notebook full of ideas. It's just picking which one I want to execute. There is a World of Sport episode coming. I just don't know when it's coming. Because, again, it's that thing of, much like the stuff where I'm talking about a subject, I like to do as much research as possible. So there will be a World of Sport episode. And it'll probably be why I love that period / style, and then like a top five, maybe like whatever number of recommendations of people that I love from that era to go and watch. So that might well be next week's episode, but I'm not too sure. But we are going to carry on rolling. So I really appreciate all the support you've given the podcast so far. It really genuinely does help, and I love it when people come up to me and talk to me about the various things I do. There was one of our ring crew that was like, on Sunday, was like, oh man, we've got a mutual friend. And then he said the name. And I'm like, you know, when your brain's like, oh, I'm at wrestling work now. And it was someone from Insomnia that I know, is a streamer from Insomnia. And I was like, oh yeah, I do know them. And like, it took me like 10 seconds to be like, oh yeah, I also do that job. So I really like it when people come up to me and talk to me like, that know me from either the podcast or like the gaming stuff or wrestling. So I always really appreciate that. All right, cool. I'm going to stop rambling. I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much for taking time out of the day. And we'll see you next time on Tuesday Night Jaw.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.